Losses and Choices, Stimulus Bill Net Operating Loss Rules for February the 16th, 2009. The Tax Update Podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and supporting document may be reproduced freely as long as no fee is charged for the use of this document or the audio podcast. Such a prohibited use would include using this podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. As you should be aware by now, the Congress on Friday passed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, guess we'll call it ERA 2009 at this point, which contained a number of tax provisions in Division B of the bill. In the document online that you can download at the website of edzollerstaxupdate.com, we have a couple of links here to the actual text of the bill, subpart B. It's divided into two parts, Division A, Division B, and the explanation for that part of the bill as well. The bill has a large number of tax provisions, over 570 pages long if you download that document. But rather than doing a rapid-fire attempt to go through them all here in today's podcast, I'm going to look at one provision today that may be of special interest as we're preparing returns for 2008. That relates to the special rule for net operating losses and the extra carryback period that will be available to small businesses. The bill provides for an elective extended net operating loss carryback provision for certain small businesses, and we want to discuss that provision now because we're going to have some rather tight deadlines coming up on making decisions relating to returns that may have been filed last year. Net operating losses generally are governed by Section 172, with Section 172A allowing a deduction for the total of net operating loss carryovers and carrybacks for each year. Net operating losses themselves are defined as Section 172C as the excess of deductions over gross income, subject to the modifications found in Section 172D, which has a list of them. A number of special operating loss treatment rules follow Section 172D for special cases, and we're not going to worry about those too much today. Rather, the key provision we're going to look at today is Section 172B, specifically mainly 172B1, which is what we find modified by this act. The general rule for the number of years that we would be carried back is found in Section 172B1A, and that provides that except as otherwise provided in this paragraph, a net operating loss for any taxable year shall be a net operating loss carryback to each of the two taxable years preceding the taxable year of such loss, and shall be a net operating loss carryover to each of the 20 taxable years following the taxable year of the loss. Note that carrying back the loss is, by default, required under the law. Since a taxpayer may expect to have greater income in the future, there is an option to waive the carryback period by election if the taxpayer decides to do so. That election is found at Section 172B3, which provides that any taxpayer entitled to a carryback period under Paragraph 1 may elect to relinquish the entire carryback period with respect to a net operating loss for any taxable year. Such election shall be made in such manner as may be prescribed by the Secretary and shall be made by the due date, including extensions of time, for filing the taxpayer's return for the taxable year of the net operating loss for which the election is to be in effect. Such election, once made for any taxable year, shall be irrevocable for such taxable year. Couple of key features to note about that provision. First, the election to waive the carryback and carry the loss forward must be made by the due date of the return, including extensions. If a taxpayer is late in filing his or her return, the option to carry forward goes away. The loss will need to be carried back. As well, once an election is made, it's irrevocable. So a taxpayer that's elected to waive the carryback cannot later change his or her mind and go back and recover old taxes. The provisions exist that way to prevent a taxpayer from doing what otherwise would seem to be the most obvious way to figure out this decision. Wait and see which way would give us the greater benefit and then elect to go that direction. And it also holds that because we have to make it by the extended due date, not just by the time we file the return, simply delaying filing so we could wait it out isn't going to help us in this matter. If we delay filing, we have elected to carry back the 2 years. Now we'll go on and talk about the new law's changes. The ARRA 2009, ERA 2009 shall we call it, adds a new provision for net operating losses. Both the original House bill and the Senate bill had net operating loss provisions, but they were provisions that had certain differences. For instance, in the House bill, a company that made use of a longer net operating loss period would have to reduce the loss. Well, in the Senate bill, that haircut didn't take place. And neither bill limited the availability based on the size of the business. The conference committee came up with a different net operating loss provision that's not quite like either chamber's original bill. The provision is going to create some issues for us, and it's going to require decisions be made in the next 60 days for some taxpayers. The longer carryback. As it did with the bonus depreciation rules, Congress looked back to a provision originally inserted in the law in 2002 to again attempt to provide a tax break to businesses that would serve to stimulate the economy. In 2002, we were looking as a reaction to the events of September 11th and getting businesses back started again after that situation. But this time, Congress didn't just do a date modification to the provision like the depreciation provision. Rather, the 2002 Section 172B1H was rather simple. It said simply, in the case of a net operating loss for any taxable year ending during 2001 or 2002, we essentially just go for 5 instead of 2. This time, Congress created a much more verbose Section 172B1H. It started out by defining the longer period that will be applicable in some cases. The new Section 172B1HI provides that in general, if an eligible small business elects the application of this subparagraph with respect to an applicable 2008 net operating loss, subparagraph AI shall be applied by substituting any whole number elected by the taxpayer which is more than 2 but less than 6 for 2. Long way of saying, you can take 3, 4, or 5, you can elect the number of years. 2, subparagraph E2 shall be applied by substituting a whole number which is one less than the whole number substituted under subclause L for 2, and 3, subparagraph F shall not apply. Thus, an eligible business will be able to select the number of years they want to carry the losses back to. When combined with Section 172B3 above, the choices will be 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, or no years. Note that the quirk that we can select any period going back 5 years except to limit it solely to the 1 year in question just before the current year. Since the loss we can carry back under these rules is this new thing called an applicable 2008 net operating loss, the definition of that term is the first thing we find as we read on the new portion of the law. That definition is found in Section 172B1HII, which provides, for purposes of this subparagraph, the term applicable 2008 net operating loss means, I, the taxpayer's net operating loss for any taxable year ending in 2008, or, if the taxpayer elects to have this subclause apply in lieu of subclause 1, the taxpayer's net operating loss for any taxable year beginning in 2008. For calendar year taxpayers, the above pair of years really represents the same year. It's going to be that year beginning in 2008 is the same year as one ending in 2008, that is, the December 31st, 2008 year. But for fiscal year taxpayers, there's going to be a choice. For full tax year taxpayers, the tax years as early as January 31, 2008 could be impacted by the carryback option, and years ending as late as November 30, 2009 would also have the option here. Fiscal year taxpayers can select one of those 2 years. As well, given the options noted above, there are a group of possible carryback options that will need to be considered by such taxpayers. Essentially, 5 options with each year, with only 1 year being able to make use of the 3 to 5 year carryback. So if we have a net loss both years, we've got to decide which one of the 2 years do we want to take advantage of the extended carryback period, if we want to take advantage of the extended carryback period in either years. These are elective options, as mentioned in the code, And we immediately discover as we continue reading there are limits on the use of the election, including the fact that this is a one-time-only election. You can't use it for more than 1 year. The limits are found to Section 172B1HIII. That provides, any election under this subparagraph shall be made in such manner as may be prescribed by the Secretary, and shall be made by the due date, including extension of time, for filing the taxpayer's return for the taxable year of the net operating loss. Under such election, any such election, I should say, once made, shall be irrevocable. Any election under this subparagraph may be made only with respect to one taxable year. These election rules mirror those we found at Section 172B3 for electing out of a carryback entirely. So once again, we have to make a choice by the extended due date of the return which way we're going to approach this, and taxpayers who file late are going to be forced to go back to the default 2-year carryback period. Key question becomes, we have this eligible small business. What is that and who can claim the benefit? The definition of an eligible small business is found at Section 172B1H4, which provides, for purposes of this subparagraph, the term eligible small business has the meaning given such term by subparagraph F3, except that in applying such subparagraph, Section 448C shall be applied by substituting $15 million for $5 million each place it appears. You may note we have a couple of cross-references here in that provision. First, it looks at Section 172BFIII for the basic definition of what's a small business. That definition tells us that the term small business means a corporation or partnership which meets the gross receipts test of Section 448C for the taxable year in which the loss arose, or in the case of a sole proprietorship, which would meet such test if such proprietorship were a corporation. The gross receipts test noted there is 448C. That's a provision that normally governs when we discover a C corporation is going to be forced to report on the accrual basis due to having excess gross receipts, generally an average of more than $5 million. That section provides the following general tests. In general, we look at the $5 million rule, and now in this case, we'll be looking at the $15 million rule, for the average annual gross receipts for the 3-year period ending with the prior taxable year. We have aggregation rules found at 448C2 that tell us that all entities treated as a single employer under subsections A or B of Section 52 or subsections M or O of Section 414 are going to be treated as one entity for purposes of testing the $15 million test. We have special rules for not in existence for the entire 3-year period, where we apply it for the period it is in existence. We have the rules for short taxable years, where we have to annualize those short years in computing our $15 million. We're told that gross receipts must be reduced by returns and allowances made during the years, and that we must include any predecessors. Now, as noted, that special rule for entities not around for 3 years probably won't be of much use, because if we've only been around for 2 years, there's only 2 years to carry back to at best anyway. And the other requirements, though, are carries overs from the tests under 448 for any of those special rules. For most taxpayers, the issue is going to be for the 3 years prior to the year in question, did average annual gross receipts amount to less than $15 million? Now remember, many taxpayers who are fiscal year taxpayers are going to have two different sets of taxable years where they could have a 5-year carryback. So we're going to have two separate times to qualify under the $15 million. It's very possible, especially for entities whose revenues are dropping in the current economy, that you might have an entity that fails the test for the year ending in 2008, but could turn out to qualify to be able to do the extended carryback for the year that ends in 2009. Now that ends the portions of the changes that actually are directly codified in Section 172. But there are a number of additional provisions in this provision in the Act, which is Section 1211 of the Act itself, that gives us some additional guidance about how we're going to apply this and how we move forward. First, Act Section 1211C provides the IRS the right to write anti-abuse rules covering this provision. And it tells us some examples of the sorts of things that Congress was worried about people might try to abuse the system with. Act Section 1211C provides that the Secretary of the Treasury or the Secretary's designee shall prescribe such rules as are necessary to prevent the abuse of the purposes of the amendments made by this section, including anti-stuffing rules, anti-churning rules, including rules related to sale leasebacks, and rules similar to the rules under Section 1091 of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 relating to losses from wash sales. It will remain to be seen what the IRS does with this authority, but it seems likely that if any creative method of exploiting this provision gains press, the IRS would have the clear authority to invoke that authority here to shut down the process. That is, the Wall Street Journal rule, shall we say, is effectively invoked by Congress here. That being that when a creative planning scheme is mentioned in the Wall Street Journal or New York Times, it's fairly certain that the publicity will draw the IRS's attention and, if the IRS feels they have the authority to do so, an attempt to shut down the option. In this case, they appear to have a fairly clear level of authority to shut things down. Therefore, we could expect that any sort of creativity that gets started in this area may be quickly squashed. You may recall we started this discussion with the basic rules involving net operating losses. We talked about the strict rules for timing for deciding whether or not we're going to waive a carryback period. And those rules were carried into the new rules in deciding when we had to elect to have a 3, 4, or 5-year period. You also probably noticed that we discussed that a January 31st, 2008 fiscal year return could make use of the provision in the law. But that would have required somebody with a fairly good sense of ESP, since the corporate return would have been required to have been filed even on extension by October 15, 2008. So it would have seemed impossible to meet the election requirements here and take advantage of this rule unless you just somehow knew that I needed to make an election under Section 172B1H and then have it sitting there so that when this law was finally passed, we would be able to take advantage of and then make the extra carryback. Probably not many of us have ESP that's in that good of shape that we were able to make that call ahead of time. As well, an entity might have decided to carry forward losses, let's say in one of those returns they filed for that period, because the prior 2 years they had paid taxes at a relatively low rate, but they may have significant taxes going back 5 years. They had decided with only a 2-year option that it might be better to take their chances going forward with higher taxes in the future. But now they look back and decide with a 5-year carryback, maybe we want to go back and get that if we can. For instance, if we had a year ended January 31st, 2008, previously we made a decision about our carryback to the year ended January 31st, 2006 as the first year we'd go back to. But now with 5 years, I can look all the way back to 2003 and remember, not just January 31st, 2003, but I could decide January 31st, 2004 or January 31st, 2005 was a year I'd first like to apply my net operating loss against. And as well, we can't forget that when we file for a tentative carryback adjustment on Form 1045 or 1138, we have to file that within 12 months of the end of the tax year. For that January 31st, 2008 year, we've already passed 12 months after the end of the tax year, so we couldn't file the election for carryback on the Form 1045 or 1138. Congress does address these issues in Act Section 1211D2, which provides the following phase-in rules. It provides, in the case of a net operating loss for a taxable year ending before the date of enactment of this act, and that date of enactment will be the date the president signs the bill, apparently sometimes early in this week, A, any election made under Section 172B3 of the Internal Revenue Code with respect to such loss may, notwithstanding such section, be revoked before the applicable date. As you recall from earlier discussion, that election under 172B3 was the election to waive the carryback period and carry the losses forward. B, any election made under Section 172B1H of such code with respect to such loss shall, notwithstanding such section, be treated as timely made if made before the applicable date. That provision is the addition of the new option to take a 3, 4, or 5-year carryback period. Finally, Any application under Section 6411A of such code with respect to such loss shall be treated as timely filed if filed before the applicable date. Section 6411A is the code section that allows us to take tentative claims for refunds and file those claims with the IRS to get our net operating loss money back, rather than having to file formal claims for refund. For purposes of this paragraph, it goes on to note, the term applicable date means a date which is 60 days after the date of enactment of this act. So all of these three options are going to be governed by the requirement that the actions take place within 60 days of the date of enactment. If you check your calendar, that will tell you it comes perilously close, shall we say, to April 15th, depending upon what date the president signs the bill. So despite the fact that's mid-tax season, we're still going to have to react mid-tax season to get these changes in for any clients it may apply to. In general, these rules give the taxpayer a 60-day period to change the application of loss on a return already filed to which the provisions could apply, and to do so via the standard tentative claim form. This will most directly impact fiscal year C corporation taxpayers who will need to decide within the 60-day period whether they expect to get a greater benefit carrying the prior year's loss to one of the available election years there, or would prefer to take the loss for the year ending in 2009 back to the set of years. Now remember, this 60-day deadline only applies to returns that under the standard rules would be too late to make the election. It has no impact on December 31st, 2008 returns, because for those returns, the deadline will generally occur well after the 60 days of the date of enactment. So we're not looking at any deadline for our 2008 calendar year returns. Rather, this 60-day deadline impacts our fiscal year returns for years ended in 2008. One interesting item to note is that it appears you could elect to undo an election to carry forward the loss under the transition rules, even if you decided then not to make the 3 to 5 year carryback election. That is, let it go to the standard 2. Why might you do that? Because back in January of 2008, you decided to carry forward the loss, believing that you were going to have profitable operations coming forward. It has now become clear with the economy deteriorating on you since then that you're not likely going to have profitable operations really soon, and maybe we'd prefer to go back and get that loss, and maybe 2 years back is the best one we've got available, and we want to now accept that. It's not clear if the IRS would see this as an oversight of Congress and that making such an election would be one of the anti-abuse issues they want to deal with. But the literal language of the bill as written certainly seems to allow for such an option to take place. Nothing says you have to elect out of carry forward and then do the election to carry back to the 3, 4, or 5 years. One other issue that will be significant is some states conform to federal net operating loss rules and allow loss carrybacks. For instance, while Arizona does not conform to corporate loss carryback rules, corporations have their losses for Arizona purposes computed under separate rules that do not allow for carryback of net operating losses. For individuals, Arizona has generally followed the federal rule in recent years. It remains to be seen whether, just to take the Arizona example, Arizona would follow this rule in this law or not. As of the moment, Arizona will not follow the rule because Arizona has adopted the federal law, but as it existed on January 1, 2008. The law as it existed on January 1, 2008 didn't have this provision in it. As well, Arizona and a few other states are facing some significant budgetary issues that may make the states not terribly inclined to follow any federal provision that would cost them revenue. While it's not clear how much revenue this would cost the state, I would suspect the losses may not be as great. Well, I should rephrase that. It's tough to know what the losses would be. In the case of Arizona, we'd limit it to individuals. Still could be interesting, but it would be one of those things to keep an eye on, and the state has to decide if they want to go there, or if not, how they would implement nonconformity. What we have to remember from this rule is that we have a number of complications to deal with under this provision with net operating losses. Going back to the federal return, remember, we have to decide for fiscal year taxpayers which year we're going to use, and for any taxpayer, we now have the option of a 5-year, a 4-year, a 3-year, a 2-year carryback, or the election to carry it forward and ignore carrybacks. So that means that we're going to be, for such taxpayers, even if we don't have the fiscal year issue in place, we're still going to essentially have to make 4 computations and a 5th guesstimate as to what the future would hold in determining which option makes the most sense and to be able to present to our clients information so they can make the choice about how to make this election. As well, we likely need to quickly identify those taxpayers who had net operating losses in fiscal years ending in 2008 who will qualify under the $15 million test and make a decision, or have those clients make a decision, whether they want to take the 2008 year-end money carried back and run with it to get that refund, or if they believe they should wait and look at what 2009's year-end will give them in terms of this. That particular item is going to be impacted both by what's available to receive back in the past in the years in question and the expected size of the current year loss. Remember that by allowing it to roll forward one more year, we are going to lose 1 year off the back end, so a year disappears. In essence, instead of a year ending in 2003, the first year available is going to be the year ending in 2004. This has been the tax update for February the 16th, 2009. The tax update, as always, is brought to you by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. Consider visiting their sites and subscribing to their newsletters. This has been the Tax Update.